B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Mike Krueger from Nickelback is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. They just released their cover of Charlie Daniels' Devil Went Down to Georgia. I asked him about that song, and apparently Charlie had actually heard it before his untimely passing.
That's correct, yeah. We really wanted his approval before we were going to release it.
He gave me some killer stories about the Pantera Boys, as well as drinking and his sobriety.
You know, I've had my time with drinking, and I just stopped because I'm not particularly good at it.
We talked about at least one of his bass-playing heroes, the iconic Canadian band Tragically Hip, and also that Funny or Die video that they made before they played halftime during a Detroit Lions game on Thanksgiving.
That experience was surreal.
Being a big hockey fan, when you're talking to a band from Canada, you got to talk a little bit about that.
Seeing both of those Russian dummy defending players, like guys who would, they would face them down with the puck and the defender would just go, shit.
We'll get into Mike's martial arts, the 15th anniversary of All the Right Reasons, and more today with bass player Mike Krueger from Nickelback on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thanks so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, thank you. And subscribe, check back often. I do this once, twice, sometimes three times a week with different artists. Just had Michael Starr from Steel Panther. Johannes from Avatar was on. Just a plethora of bands, all different kinds of music, mainly in the rock genre, but we veer off every now and then. But we're pretty much in this rock genre, whether it be prog, classic, newer, whatever the case is. So in the meantime, like I said, subscribe and share with your friends. Mike Krueger from Nickelback today. All the Right Reasons turns 15 coming up on October 4th. In October, they're going to release this special anniversary edition, which is pretty cool. And just a lot of things we talk about today with Mike. And it was cool because one of my friends, I was just like, hey, man, what bands are you working with? He's like, I texted him, you know, he's like, he named off a few bands. He's like, Nickelback. I'm like, I haven't interviewed these guys in forever. Get me one of the guys from Nickelback for sure. And I forgot talking to Mike about how much of a huge Detroit Red Wings fan is that he is, that we'll get into here coming up near the end of the interview. In the meantime, as always, thank you so much for listening. Let's get on with it. It's Mike Krueger today from Nickelback on Talkin' Rock.
Aloha, one and only Meltdown.
Yes. Hey, how you doing, man?
Happy to be included in the conversation. Everything's going all right, considering we can't be on tour. We were supposed to be out your way, actually, this summer, but obviously that's not happening.
Yeah, you know, this weekend they got that Metallica drive-in thing. Have you guys thought about doing anything like that?
I'm kind of just waiting to see how it works for them. We'll let them, you know, they lead the way on a lot of things in rock, so let's just see what happens. You know, I kind of wonder about it, but as is, you know, most times with Metallica, they get it right. So, you know, this will be a learning experience for everybody.
All right, so let me jot this down here. Mike from Nickelback says, let Metallica be the guinea pigs. Okay, I got that. Okay, perfect.
I guess that isn't exactly, it's more like let them be the leaders yet again.
Yeah, for sure. I guess this Garth Brooks thing went pretty well. I mean, I know a few like my cousins and stuff went to it. You heard about that one a couple months ago, right?
What? Tell me about this.
Garth Brooks did the same thing in the drive-ins, and I guess it was like it was sold out all across the country.
Oh yeah, I mean, like yeah, Garth Brooks. I mean, that's another level of popularity, right? That dude could sell out, you know, everything. You know, in North America, that guy could show up anywhere and it'll sell out. That it's pretty much a sure thing, and it's good for him for. You know, given his people what they need, you know, which is some more Garth Brooks.
Yeah,
that's great.
Exactly. So speaking of country, so you guys have this this cover out right now. Devil Went Down to Georgia, and from what I understand, Charlie Daniels actually heard this song before he passed away. Is that true?
That's correct. Yeah, we really wanted his approval before we were going to release it. So we sent it over to him to listen to first and give his blessing before we move forward with putting it out. And it was unfortunate that, you know, he passed, and it was like right around the time when we were going to release it, actually. So we pulled up, you know, it was supposed to come out just slightly after when he passed. And it was quite a surprise, right? It was kind of a stroke out of nowhere kind of passing. So, you know, it wasn't like he was, you know, long protracted illness. It was pretty fast. So, you know, no one saw it coming. And then when it happened, we threw the brakes on because we didn't want to appear to be sort of in any way capitalizing on his, you know, and his demise. That'd just be super lame.
Yeah. So before we started, I was telling you about, I think the last time I might have interviewed you guys was back when you guys were touring with Three Doors Down around the turn of the century, around 01 or something. But Brad Arnold from Three Doors Down told me that he became really good friends with Charlie, and Charlie's actually one of the key cogs in his getting sober. So did you guys know Charlie?
No, I didn't know that about Brad. That's great. You know, that he could be a mentor for Brad like that. That's awesome. I hadn't heard that before, but no, we'd never met him. I know that my brother Chad and I were really huge fans of that song in particular. Just a cool song. You know, I think it was our grandfather played it for us when we were real young, and you know, as I have said before, you know, to other people talking about this, so I'm kind of recycling, but I always thought it was pretty awesome that you could say son of a bitch on the radio, you know.
Right
Pretty cool.
Yeah, Brad told me that they were overseas somewhere. I want to say over in Japan or somewhere around there. Anyways, he was on the other side of the planet. And as in his words, like, he called Mr. Charlie because he was in a real bad place. And I guess Charlie Daniels kind of talked him out of it. And he kept in touch with him and made sure he was on the right path. And I guess he's been sober now for, I think it's coming up on 5 years.
Oh, that's killer. You know, that's really, really good. Anybody that can, you know, mentor somebody out of something like that is really good, because, you know, I've had my time with drinking, and I just stopped because I'm not particularly good at it. And it's, you know, it just started to hurt. Right. And honestly, I fight a lot better sober than drunk. So, you know, it's just one of those things that you never really get in fights sober.
That's right.
You know, so why fight drunk? When you're no good at it, you know. I don't, you know, I've heard people claim to be better fighters drunk, but I beg to differ. I really doubt that.
So how long are you sober, or are you just kind of have a drink here and there, or how long?
I've been sober now for 2 years, but I didn't actually, like, I should have read the writing on the wall. It's pretty obvious. I actually had to quit drinking when I was 19 years old. Until age 28, because, basically, you know, back then, I didn't stop drinking. Drinking stopped me, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It was like, I went, you know, after a particularly long, party, so strictly alcohol, mind you, that was plenty. I woke up in a hospital, decided I should probably hang it up for a bit. And I didn't drink for, you know, 9 years. And then, I was at a wedding and there was a champagne toast and somebody insisted and I did it. So I came back to drink a little bit more, and I never really got nuts on it anymore. You know, I was never, you know, like Animal House drinking, but it was more just like a consistent sort of steady drip. And then it just got to a point where it was still fun. But the next day I get the anxiety, you know, and also, I felt like somebody was driving a railroad spike through my skull for like a couple of days. And I didn't even drink enough, you know, like 3 gin and tonics. And I'm basically bedridden the next day. It just doesn't seem really worth it.
Yeah. Last time you guys were in town, I remember I brought my daughter and her friend to meet you guys for the photo op and whatnot. And your brother Chad's like, hey, after this show tonight, those speakers over there are going to be cranking up music, and we want you to come back and hang out with us. And the first thing I'm thinking of is, yeah, the guy there at the backstage is just going to let me back because you guys told me to come back, right? So, and then,
oh yeah, of course,
right. And then I told him that, you know, my daughter was there, and she, at the time, she was 16, I think. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, you're screwed. Yeah, all right, well, have a great time at the show. But the show was awesome. But You know, so it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because it's like a lot of the bands I talk to, you know, Brad and the Shinedown guys and, you know, Pop Evil guys. And I'm not speaking out of school because all these they're all sober, you know.
Yeah, they're all friends of ours, too, that I know all those people. And, you know, we've toured with all those people, actually. And they, yeah, you don't have to be, you know, a big rock star to screw it up.
you know,
it can happen when you work in a factory or a store or whatever, a supermarket, car dealership. You can screw it up there too. It's that we musicians get a sort of a bad rap as all being on drugs or screwed up on booze, when the reality is it can happen to anybody. There is, you know, sort of a lower expectation for us. It's kind of almost expected, you know, that we'll be sort of losers. but other people have to at least have the appearance of functionality. You know, needless to say, they're not. You know, the people that you think are doing just great are, you know, there's a lot of them that are hooked on heroin or something. You know, everybody has a hard ride, man. And you know, this stuff can get anybody. But I'm happy to hear anyone who gets out from under it, you know, and just realizes it's not working for them and makes a change in their life. And that's really what it takes. Like, you know, when you get to the bottom, the only one who's going to pull you up is yourself. People can try interventions and treatment and all that shit, but the reality is if you don't, you know, take care of it yourself, you're never going to win. You got to decide.
Yeah, and it's like some of these guys, you know, once that spigot goes on at, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or after the show or whenever it is, it just doesn't go off. They just have no off, you know, and so it's good that some of these guys just, you know, get kick it to the curb. But, hey, so this October, you guys are celebrating the 15th anniversary of All the Right Reasons, obviously a monster album for you guys. Tell us what you have in store for the release and all this other kind of stuff.
Well, this is so archaic. Even doing a podcast, they say that it's a 2 CD collection is just ridiculous. Like, you know, who even does that anymore? I might as well call it like a 2 phonograph collection or whatever.
But, dude, I just got back into a vinyl about 3.5 years ago. I can't. I'm going to get this on vinyl. I have to get it on vinyl, I guess, right?
That's so cool. Yeah, we will have it. It'll be out there on vinyl as well. But it's All the Right Reasons record, of course. And then there's, from that era, quite a number of live tracks that we did out there.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, this record was just so good. And, you know, it's like, all right, let's just start with Side of the Bullet, first of all. I mean, you know, obviously Dimebag Darrell played on that one. And Vinnie Paul was a good friend of mine. I remember, you know, I'm a huge hockey guy. He was, too. I remember after the Vegas Golden Knights lost the cup, he texted me for like an hour that night, you know, just all bummed out about that. But, I mean, you know, talk about, like, your relationship with the Pantera guys.
Oh, yeah, they were closest with Chad because, you know, to be honest with you, Chad would be willing to run with them and try to keep up the alcohol consumption pace that they did, which, if you partied with those guys, you know what that means. It's essentially a death march, and that is not an exaggeration, as you know. I only had the misfortune once of getting mixed up in a quote-unquote, you know, party situation with them, where it was sort of, you know, Dime was bartending and I ran away like a coward. I just did. Like, I got to the point where my legs didn't work anymore and I couldn't see, and I just did the, you know, the Irish goodbye. You know, it's like, hey guys, I gotta go use the John, and I just never came back because I was like, these guys are gonna kill me, man. And they were having a great time too, as they, you know, as they had such an both the brothers, Dime especially, had this magnificent tolerance. They could just drink the stuff like water, and they just kept getting funnier and funnier. Or maybe I got more and more drunk at it. That's probably both. But you know, then they would start to notice that your motor skills are going, and you know, your nervous system's not working correctly, and that's when they really pour it on to really get you over the finish line, so to speak. And I remember reaching that threshold where I was like, this is this is going to be bad. You know, I was already kind of, you know, I was thinking I was going to make one of their home videos, stumbling into a, you know, fireplace or something. And so I was just like, yeah, I got the hell out of there and went and, you know, my wife was actually on my bus. This is in Dallas when we were playing there. And, you know, my wife was on the bus and the kids and everything. And I would not want to see video of me getting on that bus and kind of, you know, stumbling and, you know, crashing into stuff on the way to bed and, you know, crawled into bed with my wife. And, you know, she indicated that I had an odor of a distillery, you know, and that I should probably stay on my side of the bed or else I was going to have to go sleep someplace else. And it was pretty rough, man. It was pretty bad. And you know what, Chad, I'm not going to tell Chad's story, but let's just say he reached the target zone that Diamond and Vinny were looking for. they finished him off really good, and you know, I heard about it the next day, but they were dear pals. And and that night, actually, that night that they tried to murder me with alcohol, we heard the first finished Damage Plan record, actually.
Oh, and, okay. Yeah.
You know, the other members of Damage Plan were there, and they were really, really nice too. And you know, we were listening to that record, and I think that's what kind of got me caught up in the moment. It was, I was really into hearing their new music, and we listened to that, and you know, we saw them some other times, but that was the last time I saw the two together. Was there at that time, and I never saw Dime again. We saw Vinny at some other things, and he was just never really the same after Daryl was murdered. If you're friends with Vincent, you know that he never recovered from losing his brother. He was just so sad all the time. And you know, it might have also been because whenever I saw Vinny, you know, obviously our band is two brothers in a band like his was, and I think that might have made him sad to, you know, see me and Chad playing together. And you know, I got a chance to just tell Vinny one time. I'm really glad I got to tell him. I was just like, you know what, I just want to thank you for, you know, never letting us down. You know, those two guys were the real deal. They were the real rock gods. They played their asses off better than everybody. They had a killer band. They were really good guys, really nice to us. And as fans, like talking with them and hanging out with them, it was always, I always felt like a 15-year-old kid again, you know, listening to Cowboys from Hell. And just, I just wanted them to know that they never, neither one of them ever tarnished the legend that they had made for themselves. They were as great as I wanted them to be. You know, you know, when you meet your heroes, sometimes it's a bummer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, meeting them wasn't. It was a reaffirmation of greatness.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because I've said this to people before. It's like Vinny always seemed to be missing a piece of him after his brother was gone. And it's like, I didn't know him that well, but he would text me things. And I don't know if you ever got the text from him with the black heart emojis, and he loved his emojis. But I always felt like there was a little bit of him, well, actually kind of a lot of him missing. You know what I'm saying? Like you just alluded to.
I think a lot of Vinny died that night.
Yeah. Yeah, no question.
Daryl died. I don't think he was a complete human being anymore, and I could kind of see it coming. Like I remember I talked to Chad a few times about it and just said, hey man, I don't think Vinny's ever coming all the way back. You know, like I don't think he can do it. You know, the damage was so permanent and deep that, you know, he would try to have a good time and put on a brave face and stuff, and you know, he would still be funny, and of course he'd be funny, but just he had, like you say, there's some pieces that got ripped out of there that never got put back.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's switch gears here to Detroit.
You've played a lot.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, but VP was such a great guy, you know, and I know he liked you guys. But
yeah.
Let's switch gears to gigs here you've done in Detroit. So I know the answer to this question, but what's the biggest gig you've played in Detroit?
Well, we did that We played Thanksgiving up at one time, an NFL show.
Yeah, that's the biggest gig. That was the biggest gig.
Is that the biggest point? I expect you to probably know better than me. I was really hoping I was right about that. I'm not good at remembering stuff.
Well, not only are you playing in the stadium, but you're also playing in a live television audience and the whole thing. But right before that, this petition goes out that people don't want you. I mean, it was hysterical, right? So you guys go and do this Funny or Die thing, which was just awesome. Tell me about that whole experience. I didn't have a chance to talk to you guys since then, but that was great the way you guys stabbed back at it, and I thought it was just fantastic.
Well, you know, I'm not sure exactly who wrote all that. It definitely wasn't us, but they were ready when we got there to shoot that. They had it all laid out, and Paul Scheer is just, oh my God, dude. That experience was surreal, because it's like, you know, when you see the clip, it's yeah, sure, it's a funny clip, and we're, you know, sort of just kind of along for the ride on it. The other two people on screen are both stand-up comics, right? The producer's a stand-up comic. The director's a stand-up comic. The place is full of freaking comedians, right? So it's like, there's stuff happening off camera that is just making us like laugh so hard we're crying, right? Basically the first probably hour of shooting was useless because we were doubled over, like rolling on the floor. Because they were like ad-libbing and making stuff up. Like Scheer never said the same lines the same way twice. Every one was a different delivery in a different iteration of the line. And he was just totally killing. So basically what they had to do, and it was funny because they never really batted an eye. That was really interesting. They were going through this, and they were slaughtering us so bad that we couldn't use any of the footage for the first at least hour. But they didn't even miss a beat. It was almost like they were practicing at the same time they realized they weren't going to get anything useful for us because we were all screwed up.
Well, I thought it was kind of funnier that sometimes they'd read the lines or something. They'd show you guys, and obviously you guys aren't actors or comedians, and just kind of like maybe almost the dazed look you guys had on your face was even funnier than anything you probably could have done.
By that point we were kind of almost numbed up to the level of humor that they were delivering, because like the stuff that's in the clip, none of that had been done at times before.
Right.
Like,
that was all
just there then.
I love it when he says, there's an online petition.
Yeah. It was so absurd and so fun and so funny, and me getting to dress up like Alice Cooper was some kind of dream come true. So it was so good.
So
and to see our drummer Daniel as Dave Coulier was very special.
Dave is a friend of mine. I spent a week with him one night with Kid Rock one night.
That's another high risk offender right there. That Bob Ritchie guy. You got to strap your helmet on tight to run with that guy.
You guys did a great. I think I left the hotel at 7 o'clock in the morning that time. But you guys did a great Saturday night. Of course, the Elton John song with him. That was here in Detroit at his house, right up in northern Detroit, right?
Because of the beauty of electronic media and digital technology, we were able to do our parts in Canada, and he did his parts at his place in Michigan there. So, you know, it was swapped over email. It was a beautiful thing.
No, it sounds great. So I was just talking to you about the vinyl records. By the way, before I get into that real fast, so let me ask you this. How nervous were you guys on the stage in Detroit? Because I know that live TV is a whole different animal, and plus, you know, with the people protesting and different things. I mean, was there a lot of nerves when you guys took the stage at that Thanksgiving game?
Not really. It was sort of one of those things that the cheering crowd kind of dispelled all that.
Yeah.
You know, it's really easy to get freaked out by a couple of loudmouth assholes, but then when you get to the thing and you realize that actually there's more people who want you there and want you doing it, it kind of helps.
Yeah,
you know, the vocal minority is you know, always, you know, there'll always be louder, and negativity will always be louder than positivity. You just gotta realize all that.
I know, and like, you know, the haters, you know, and Nickelback, it's a whole thing. It's gone on for years and years. But I saw you guys, you know, I don't know, 3 years ago, whenever you guys were here. First of all, the show is completely sold out. Second of all, the show is awesome. I love, like, three quarters of the way through the show, Chad says, hey, indulge us for a few minutes. We're going to play a new song, then we're going to do hits all the way out. And I'm like, that is awesome. I couldn't believe it. It was just like bang, bang, bang. It was awesome. And I tell people sometimes, I go, you know what? When Chad's pissing in his gold toilet, he doesn't care what you think. So just, you know, you can be a hater if you want, but I've always defended you guys. You guys are some of the nicest guys in this industry, and I know you guys have to put up with all sorts of grief, but at the end of the day, like you say, people are there to see you play, and you have fun, and, you know, you sell records, and, you know, so it's all good.
You know, it's just a hazard of doing well, unfortunately, you know. It's okay. If you want people to you know, think nothing of you or say nothing of you, then be nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll cover it for you. You know, it's just a side effect of doing well is that not everybody loves you. You know, everybody might know you, but everybody doesn't love you. That's what we learned. And it's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. So I was just gonna say, so my friend Johnny Chow, bass player for Stone Sour, you know him?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I only know Corey from that band.
All right. So Chow gets me into vinyl like 3.5 years ago over a conversation we had. It's kind of a long story, but I mean, I was going to ask you about your bass heroes. I got this Geddy Lee, the big, you know, book of bass and everything, and I've kind of gotten into it a lot. And I watched a Jaco Pastorius documentary over the
wow,
lockdown and all this crap. So who are some of your heroes growing up as far as that's concerned?
Well, I kind of have decided that I'm gonna claim a different influence in every interview because everybody asks me this.
Okay,
and I have like a lot of them, so you know I'm.
So which one do I get?
You know what? I was gonna save Geddy Lee for you actually because you know he's Canadian and awesome.
Yeah, Geddy Lee. There you go. Speaking of Canadian and awesome, I just happened to meet someone a couple days ago, and they brought up the Tragically Hip Long Time Running documentary, which
yeah,
I'd never seen before, and I watched it. Now
yeah,
listen, I grew up in Buffalo. I spent half my life here in Detroit the last 25 years, and it's like, so I'm familiar with the Hip, but it's like, you know, people outside of Canada don't know how much that band influenced them. Were you able to watch that last show, and did you see that documentary?
I did get out on the last tour, and I did see the documentary, yeah. And it was the last concert that I saw of them as an operating band. You know, it was that last tour, kind of the farewell run. And, you know, everybody knew where it was at with Gord Downie and his health. And that, you know, this was going to be it if he made it to the end of the tour, which thankfully he did.
Right.
You know, because it wasn't good. You know, he was in a very bad way health wise. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah.
I did. It's really something really odd to see a concert when you know that the lead singer is dying.
Yeah.
And that you're not going to see this again. You're just not. So as a result, it is a completely different experience because you're happy and you're cheering because of the songs, but there's also a kind of weight there that is just, it makes everything completely different and more meaningful because a concert is a great thing. And you never know when you go see a band or artist when it's going to be the last time for whatever reason. There's a zillion reasons why, you know, you might never see a band or artist again. Maybe the next time they come, they're sold out. Maybe, you know, the band breaks up, maybe whatever. It's always special. But when you can see the end coming, that changes everything, and it made it really, really special. Really special.
Yeah, I wrote a blog about it that weekend, you know, and I expected it to just, you know, lay on my internet like a piece of, you know, an old ham sandwich or something. But people like shared it because I realized I kind of heard that they were playing their last show in Kingston, you know, down here in the States and whatnot. And I'm thinking, man, this is the last time this guy's going to walk off stage. And it kind of hit me pretty heavy. And I'm like, you know, like you said, it's like, you know, you knew you were seeing it for the last time, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of hard. You know, I don't think I fully understood it. Obviously, you know, you try your best to take it all in, but you know, you also want to live in the moment, and that's kind of, you know,
yeah,
that's kind of the tough part of that one.
Well, I'll tell you what, a couple more things here, and we'll cut you loose. And I really appreciate you calling in, Mike, and answering some questions here for us. Speaking of Canadian bands, I talked to Brad and Matt from 3 Days Grace yesterday, and they want to know how your martial arts is going.
Oh, that's cute. You know, it's actually going kind of shitty because of COVID. I can't get in there and practice strangling people right now because you're not allowed. I mean, I did go. It's kind of a funny thing. I train at a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym here in Los Angeles with some just fantastic people. I train with a room full of black belts. So I just learn and learn and learn and learn. But I was in there, you know, when it was a couple of months back when it kind of looked like we were getting COVID on the run, and the school opened up and I remember going, and it was like you had to wear face covering the whole time, which is really interesting when you're like at threshold metabolic rate. So you're trying not to vomit because you're working so hard, but you got a mask over your mouth. So breathing's very interesting. But then we were training, you know, we began to train, you know, early in the first class back. And I remember, you know, these Brazilian fellas that come, they're from Rio, and the lead instructor guy goes, "Hey, everybody, you know, put your masks on. We got to have masks on when we train because of the, you know, the spread of this, this virus." Right. And, these two Brazilian dudes who I've trained with for, you know, quite a while there. Mm. They're totally awesome guys and really, really great, Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners and great teachers. You know, they both just said, "What do you mean mask?" And, you know, it's like standing there and the instructor's like, we've been in kind of like a mask mandate here in LA County for 3 months, guys. And they were like, "Oh, really? We've never put a mask on. We don't have masks." and that was when I was like, okay, I think I'm going to stay home for a little while. Like, I don't, you know, if this is kind of the, you know, the overarching seriousness, which, you know, they're bringing, I gotta take a time out. So yeah, I haven't been on the mat for quite some time, but, no pun intended.
Yeah. You gotta tap out a little bit. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Nice one. Very, very well done, sir.
So, a couple things here to wrap things up here. NHL playoffs, you watching them?
I'm not.
You're not.
And,
okay.
You know, okay. There's two reasons why. First of all, I got two stories for you. One, when Pavel Datsyuk left town, I couldn't watch hockey anymore because Detroit.
That's right. You're a Detroit Red Wings fan, aren't you?
Correct.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
I know very well the guy who brought Pavel Datsyuk over and picked him up at the airport, Jim Nill, the old general manager of the Red Wings, or assistant GM, pardon me, who now is the GM in Dallas.
Dallas, yeah.
I talked to him after he picked Pavel up. And, you know, he had scouted him from Russia. And so he meant a lot to me as a player. Also, I mean, look at it.
Oh, my God.
The guy carried the team, you know, for at least two seasons. But beautiful, beautiful man, beautiful hockey player. So when he got dealt, I was like, oh, shit. And, you know, what I was afraid of did, in fact, happen. It you know, I don't have to tell you what happened. And this season, you know, when Detroit was sadly mathematically eliminated before the All-Star break, I was just like, fuck, guys, can we just everybody just go home? Like, you know, hit the gym, like, just fuck it. Like, why even, you know, like, don't even, you got all these young guys that are coming up that could have a great career ahead of them. And what, you're going to skate them for what? To pad the record and you know, like, contribute to the win column for the teams that are going to make the playoffs? Like, this is gross. And so in a way, COVID kind of, you know, let the Wings off the hook, which is you know, one, you know, definite good side effect. But the other thing is that I kind of started to have a realization about kind of sports and my relationship with sports. I started to examine, you know, a lot of relationships, personal and otherwise, in my life a little while ago. And I kind of realized that when Detroit Red Wings have a tough time and they lose, I got my heart broken. And when they win, I don't get anything. So I was like, wait a minute, this is a shitty relationship I'm in right now. This isn't really good for me. Like, I'm only my heart is only getting moved one way, and it's to the negative. So I decided to, you know, that was one more relationship I decided to cut off with, not with the Red Wings per se, but with sports in general. I was like, if I'm going to, you know, be interested in sports, I'm going to do them. You know, but sitting around watching them, I just decided to stop doing it. And I thought I'd have all this extra time on my hands, but you know.
That's right, yeah. Well, I don't even want to start talking to you about hockey because we'll be here all day. I just golfed the other day in McCarty's golf outing, and Eddie Mio was my partner and stuff. Yeah, and it's like we got into this conversation about Fedorov or Datsyuk. I don't even want to go there because we could talk. I got stuff I got to do. But last thing here for you.
That's not an easy conversation. I would really like to have been a fly on the wall to hear Mac talk about those two guys because, being on ice, it's a different experience from what you and me have. Comparing those two is kind of preposterous.
It's a tough one, man. It's so tough because when Fedorov was on his game, he was on his game. But Datsyuk was so smart, you know. It's like, it's so skilled. But anyhow, hey, last thing here for you, because I'll talk hockey all day long. Don't even get me started.
Me too. I don't follow it anymore. But you know, seeing both of those Russian dummy defending players, like guys who would face them down with the puck and the defender would just go, shit, I'm going to make the highlight reel right now. You know, in the wrong way, like, you know, dive in the wrong way and then the guy just casually skates past you. It's awful.
Yeah, you've heard all the stories. You've heard all the stories where guys were like, oh, no, when Datsyuk's coming down the ice, it's just not what you want to see. But anyways, all right, so last thing here for you. What's going on with Nickelback? Obviously, you guys got the 15th anniversary thing coming up, but are you guys working on some new music? Are you guys, anything you can tell us and fill us in on?
We're looking at some new music, and we're taking our time, and there's a few ideas cooking right now. We do, you know, as you know, we talked about earlier, we just released that single, that Charlie Daniels single, Devil Went Down to Georgia. I'd be remiss if I didn't revisit that just to prove that we're doing something. We actually have a documentary that we're right now just putting the finishing touches on and looking for a distribution partner for to make sure that we get it out to everybody. And that's really what's going on is we're trying to get that thing polished up and out.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Next time you're back in Detroit, we'll have to hit up a game or something. Red Wings. Have you been to the new stadium, the new arena?
No, I haven't been there yet.
It's killer, man. It's really cool. Yeah, a Little Caesars Arena.
Of course it is. Illich family doesn't do half measures of anything. That's going to be awesome.
That's right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for the time, man. Great catching up.
Thanks so much.
And there he is, Mike Krueger from Nickelback today. On Talkin' Rock. I could have talked to Mike for another hour or so and still not touched everything I want to touch on. But talked to him for a few minutes after the interview and told him that. And we're going to try to get him back sometime in the future. If you get a chance, definitely Google that Funny or Die Nickelback video. It's so funny. You know, so here's the thing. It's like Nickelback's announced as the halftime entertainment at the Detroit Lions football game Thanksgiving game. Okay, so they're going to play halftime and the whole thing. So the fans don't ever complain about the epitome of mediocrity that's been the Detroit Lions for like a billion years, right? No, they have to complain and get these petitions going so that Nickelback can't play halftime. It was ridiculous. And the video is hysterical. If you get a chance, go back and watch that for sure. Hey, guys, thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. We will do it again very, very shortly. keep checking back because I'm constantly talking to some of your favorite rockers right here on Talkin' Rock.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.